Bakova Ashrenu. To begin the Tufshin Pei Gimel, the 15th year of the Kollel here in Chicago, with this Oilam Ashrei Shezachinu. This Kollel is about a community of learning. And we have people from all across the different neighborhoods coming together tonight. Rabbi Schechter spoke a few minutes ago at Skok Yeshiva, and he reminded everybody that Hashiveinu Avinu in the davening is the introduction, Hashiveinu Avinu L'Sor Sechon, to learning Torah. And how awesome is it to look around and to see this special gathering that is dedicated strictly, exclusively to Limud HaTorah. How awesome is this? And so I just want to take a moment of Hakaras HaTov to thank, first of all, our office team, Elliot and Tracy Schultz, and everybody who put together the logistics. I want to thank Ida Crown Jewish Academy for being an achsanya for us. And it's actually very special. It's not the first time, but this is the first time that we've created a Beis Medrash for the community and the Beis Medrash that we learn in every single day. So this is a great opportunity to welcome you, so to speak, to our Beis Medrash, although usually there's a mechitza and we're learning on this side. But thank you to the Academy for being our achsanya shel Torah on a regular basis. I want to thank and recognize our special alumni who are here, Rabbi Stromer, Rabbi Zucker, who will continue to inspire and make us proud. One second. What am I missing? Oh, Rabbi Shabbos, I'm sorry. I didn't see it. And Rabbi Shabbos, the Baal Shem Minyan. And to appreciate what it means to be part of a Kollel community, which includes special alumni. And I also want to thank the Friedman family. With Buli Ayin Harab, this is many years that we've had the opportunity to bring special guests to our Chicago community, thanks to your vision and your generosity. And so that brings us to the special guest we have this evening, by Shai Schechter, who is Rosh Beis Medrash at the Young Israel of Woodmere, tremendous Marbitz Torah, and somebody who has brought a great amount of not just Torah knowledge, but Torah enthusiasm and energy into an unbelievable community. I'm hearing about just the scope of what is happening in the Young Israel of Woodmere is simply amazing. And the fact that he is speaking at many minyanim on a regular basis and carved out just one night to come to Chicago, to spend time with us, to be mechazik us, it is a great schus and a pleasure. So thank you very, very much for making the time. Shnu Kavod Torah, Rav Shai Schechter.
Good evening, everybody, and a Gemar Chasima Tova. I could not have thought of a better way to start off Tufshin Pei Gimel than to be teaching Torah, to be learning Torah together. It's such a schus, and I thank you for including me in this very, very uplifting and special, beautiful evening. And I really think we would all be remiss if we did not highlight the efforts of Rabbi Brand, who makes all of this happen. He's talking about 15 years of alumni. There's a reason why there are 15 years of alumni spread about in this community. Not only their tentacles in this community, but some of them have even come and graced our community. Rabbi Trump, who's a very prominent rabbi in our community, as well as Rabbi Wallach, who's a very well-known mechanech in our community as well. They are also alum of your kollel and gained so much from their years here. And I thank you for infusing so many in our community with so much inspiration because of what you have given to them. And it's great to share together. It's an opportunity to learn. This is, as Rabbi Brand just said, Tenu Kavod HaTorah. This is such a Kavod HaTorah, just the fact that we're all coming together. And as I said before, Hashiveinu Avinu L'Sarasecha, the greatest way to come to an understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the greatest way to come back to having an appreciation of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in our lives, is through the vehicle of Limud HaTorah. And I thank you all for giving me the opportunity to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this beautiful way. L'Hagdil Torah U'Laha Adira. It should be the first of many, many opportunities that you have to come together, to learn as a community, to grow as a community, to inspire each other as community members, and to be mechazik the efforts. Ish es re'ehu ya'azoru ve'elachiv yomar chazak. So the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, we're in the Aseres Yimei Tshuva, and the Rambam famously writes, Af al pi, even though it is the case, shehatshuva v'hatza'aka yafa li'olam, it's always good to be involved in the journey of Tshuva. Still, says the Rambam, ba'aseres hayam shebein Rosh Hashanah v'yom HaKippur, when we talk about the 10 days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, hi yafa b'yoser. It is even more critical, more important for us to be focused on in Yanei Tshuva, u'miyadhi misdabeles. And it is accepted immediately, says the Rambam. How do we know? Shenamar, because the pasuk says, "Dirshu Hashem bihi matzo," as we just read yesterday in the Haftorah, "Dirshu Hashem bihi matzo kira'uhu biyoso karov." When HaKadosh Baruch Hu is considered to be close to us, it is these days, Shebein Rosh Hashanah biyom HaKippur. So obviously, we know that this is a very auspicious time, and the recognition of being involved and engaged in a tshuva process is something that humbles all of us. It's something that makes us understand that none of us are perfect. All of us are aspiring toward greatness. None of us are going to live a life of perfection. It's just not the way it is. And in fact, the Gemara says tshuva is so important. It's one of the things, one of the aspects that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put into the world before the world was even created. Because it's so obvious that a human being cannot be perfect. Adam ein tzadik ba'aretz asher yasa tova lo yechta. There is no possibility like that. You ever think about the fact that the Jewish people are nimshalu lilavana? We actually have a lunar calendar, which is opposed to many others who follow a solar calendar. And why is that? Why do we follow a lunar calendar? So when I first took the job in the Young Israel of Woodmere 8 years ago, Rav Asher Weiss, my great Rebbe from Yerushalayim, called me and he made a comment to me, which I will never forget, where he said, Mazel Tov, it's beautiful, it's amazing, Lahagda Torah Lahadira, you should be Matzliach. But he said, why are Klal Yisrael Nimshalu Lelevana? Why do we count toward the moon? Why do we follow a lunar calendar and not the sun? And he said, the answer is, Lo Chashuv Kama Ata Gadol, Ela Kama Ata Gadel. Nobody cares how big and prominent you are. That's not the focus of life. What matters in life is, how much are you growing? And that's why we follow a lunar calendar. Because all of us need to constantly and consistently aspire for a growth kind of mindset. We're never going to be the Chama. We're not going to be that personality that is so strong and powerful, that is all perfect and always there. Sometimes we're larger, sometimes we're smaller. Sometimes we may feel deflated because of a failure that we may have. But all of that is part of the experience of what a human being represents. And that really is what we focus on during this time of the year. It's an opportunity for all of us to look carefully at that growth mindset and to really try to analyze how much are we on the path and the journey of growth toward a full opportunity and experience of tshuva, which is never going to be reaching perfection. We're always going to have challenges, and sometimes they're going to be renewed challenges. New opportunities for us to challenge ourselves. But that is really what this time of the year gives us hope and promise to think about. When the Rambam talks about that in the Mor Nebuchim, he says, it's impossible for a person to live life without making a mistake. We're all human beings in every profession that we may be in. We all make mistakes. You can have a doctor or a lawyer who is extremely proficient, very skilled, and yet they make mistakes as well. And yet the Rambam says, if a person believes that there is no way to try to fix or heal a mistake that they may have made, Yasmid b'ta'iso, says the Rambam, a person will just throw in the towel. Forget it. Why should I try to work on myself if there's nothing to work on? If there is no hope, I've hit rock bottom, there's nothing more that I can do to help myself, says the Rambam, a person will give up. V'shema gam Yosef b'merio im lo tielo eitza. And therefore, says the Rambam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chazdo, gave us the opportunity for tshuva to give us a boost, to give us an opportunity to realize it is not all lost. We've all made mistakes, and that's the reality of life. It's the fragility of life. But we all have the opportunity to recognize that the same HaKadosh Baruch Hu ki hu yada yitzreinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows that we were created with certain innate qualities, certain innate challenges, All of us have our own, and yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us the opportunity to try to perfect them just a little bit and to move forward in a positive direction. So as we approach Yom HaKippurim and we're well into the Aseret Yemei Teshuva, we have a basic premise, we have a presumption that HaKadosh Baruch Hu not only gave us this gift of Teshuva, but also that He yearns, that He is excited, that He thirsts, He desires our ability to do Teshuva and to come back. He is encouraging and supportive. And this is what we're going to say in the Shemona Esrei on Yom HaKippurim. Atah nosein yad laposhim. What does it mean, atah nosein yad laposhim? When I think about that, the image that I conjure up in my mind is, imagine you have somebody who's drowning at sea, and they need somebody to come and take them out of that wave that's going to wash them away. And suddenly somebody comes from a boat and puts out a hand to them, and gives them that hand and gives them the ability to be pulled back to safety. That's what it means, atah nosein yad. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't just stand there and wait. He extends the opportunity of tshuva to all of us. He goes out of His way to try to encourage us and to give us the opportunity to be supported in our efforts of tshuva. And based on that understanding, it is not something that is limited to HaKadosh Baruch Hu alone, that He is supposed to be encouraging of our tshuva process. You find that throughout history, throughout Chazal and the Rishonim, we find numerous examples throughout the many millennia of Jewish history where the leaders of the generation tried their utmost to give opportunities to people to realize that they should be comfortable, that they should be encouraged in their path towards tshuva. And that's what I want to get into a little bit now. I'm just going to give a couple of examples. Number one, we have, if you look on the sheet here, so the Gemara tells us in Maseches Sota, Daf Lamed Beis Amud Beis. Anyone who doesn't have, I think there were some extras over there. The Gemara tells us as follows. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai. It so happens that Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai and Rabbi Yochanan did not live at the same time. So Rabbi Yochanan lived two generations after Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Shimon ben Yochai was one of the great Tanoim. And Rabbi Yochanan is saying something that he heard in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Mipnei ma? Isn't it interesting? Why is it? Tiknu tefila balachash. Why do we daven silently? What a strange thing to do. People pass by you. They wonder, what are you whispering? Who are you talking to? So why do we daven silently? And the Gemara says the reason why is shalolavayish asobrei ha'aveira. Rashi explains what it means is we don't want to have any shame or humiliation. We don't want to, rachmana litzlan, have any embarrassment to the person who is talking about the aveiras that they may have done. You can have somebody who is disclosing very personal information in a conversation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which, by the way, I think what we see from this Gemara is that our tefillah is supposed to be an intimate conversation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If it was just following the text of the Siddur, so you would say, what's so embarrassing? Everybody's saying the same thing. But the same way that we all say, Rifa'enu, and if we have, God forbid, somebody in our own family who's not well, we are going to add a personalized tefillah in Rifa'enu, or we all say, Baruch Aleinu for a parnasa. But if somebody particularly does not have a parnasa and they need that help, they will add a special paragraph that individualizes the tefillah, personalizes it for them. So too, when we talk about tshuva, it's the same. And therefore, the Gemara says, if you have somebody who's being misvadeh, somebody who's davening Shemona Esrei, and they're talking very intimately with HaKadosh Baruch Hu about their own personal shortcomings, isn't that going to be embarrassing? Other people are going to overhear the conversation. And as a result of that, we try our best never to allow a situation to end up in a place where somebody will be shamed. And therefore, standard practice is, everybody says the Shemona Esrei privately, quietly to themselves, so that we never come to a place where somebody will be humiliated. Obviously, the source of that halacha is from a pasuk in Parshas Tzav, where the Torah tells us, "B'makom asher tishchat ha'ola," in the same place where you bring the carbon ola, is where you also offer the carbon chatas. The Gemara explains why. Because if we're going to have a certain designated location in the Beis HaMikdash for somebody to bring a carbon chatas, everyone's going to be pointing at them and saying, oh, they're only here because they need to do something, some kind of tshuva for a mistake that they may have made. If we have everybody going to the same location, it's not obvious. And this way everybody will be comfortable, no one's ever going to be ashamed. And that is what the Gemara tells us the origin is of this idea of davening tefillah balachash. Again, going out of our way to try to make sure that somebody should be encouraged to be involved in tshuva and never be ashamed from a mistake that they may have made. You go a little bit further, we have a Gemara Maseches Gittin, a Mishnah. Daf Nun Hei Amid Aleph, where the Gemara tells us an interesting halacha. We know the Torah says somebody who's involved in thievery has to return the object that they stole. Beheshev Esagzela Asher Gaza. You have to give it back. Well, would it help if I stole somebody's item and then I just paid them for it? The Gemara says no. The Rambam Paskins, that would not work. I have to make sure to actually give the item back, and only then can I begin the process of tshuva. But what happens, say for example, writes the Gemara, if you have somebody who steals a beam, and then they put it into a construction site, and they use it as the foundation of a home that is now built, l'shem u'l'tiferes, $3 million house, a beautiful home, a mansion, $5 million home, and now you're going to tell that person, well, I'm sorry, the heshev esagzela asher gazel, turns out, we look back at the cameras, about 3 years ago when you were starting the construction, you mistakenly or purposefully took that beam from somebody else. It's not yours. And that's the foundational beam of your home. I'm sorry to inform you, but the Heshev HaSagzela dictates that you have to take down the whole house and you have to tear down all the walls and all the foundations in order to get that one rotten beam out and return it to the owner. Well, what will it feel like if that's the instruction I'm given? Is there any possibility, says the Mishnah, that I'm actually going to go ahead with the process of tshuva? I'm just going to say, you know what? Forget it. The Heshev HaSagzela, it's not worth it. My house is worth more to me than the Aveira. Forget about it. Says the Gemara, we had this problem. And we want to try to do something to encourage people to want to be able to get involved in tshuva. So what do we do, says the Mishnah, let's learn it together. Al Amarish HaGazel Shabana Bebira. If you have a builder, a contractor, an architect who puts a beam into a building that does not belong to him, so the Gemara says that you take the person and you say, listen, mipnei takanas hashavim, because we want to give you an opportunity to feel encouraged to do tshuva, we're going to allow you to leave the beam there and just pay for it. How does that work? We know that the Rambam says you can never get by gzeila without giving the item back, but here is an exception to the rule because we want to encourage people to be able to do tshuva. But if we don't change the rule in some way, then there's no way that it's ever going to happen at all. Rashi there explains, if you're going to try to tell the person to dismantle the whole house, the whole building, there's no way they're going to do that. They're just going to throw in the towel and say, forget it, tshuva's not worth it, I don't want to be involved. The Gemara actually says in Baba Kama, Daf Tzadi Dalet, a fascinating Gemara, Maisaba the Mechad Shabikis Lashos Tshuva, the Gemara says, there was somebody who wanted to do tshuva. His wife turns to him and says, what? If you're going to do tshuva, even the belt that you're wearing, even the undergarments that you're wearing, you have to give back. You stole money your whole life. There's not a single penny that you own that belongs to you. You were running the largest Ponzi scheme in the history of the United States, and you stole all that money. Nothing belongs to you. And if you're going to have to start getting involved in the act of tshuva, you're not going to have anything. We're going to have no house. You're going to have no clothing. We're not going to be able to live. We're not going to survive. Just forget it. His wife was discouraging him. Says the Gemara, V'nimna v'lo'asa tshuva. He said, you know, you're raising a good point. I had a moment of clarity where I felt, let me try to fix my ways, let me try to involve myself in tshuva, but you're raising a good point. We don't have a house, we're not going to have any food to eat, we're not going to have any clothing. What are we going to do? On that occasion, the Gemara says, Ba'oso Shah, they said, Hagazlanim umalve beribis. If you have somebody, the Rishonim explained, if you have somebody who is running such a scheme where every single thing in their life is one big geneva, is one big act of thievery, there's nothing that they have lawfully. In that case, says the Gemara, they said that ein mekabla mehem, if they come to return all the money that they stole, we shouldn't accept the money. We shouldn't accept the money. Even though it's rightfully mine, they stole from me. But the reason why we shouldn't accept it, the Rishonim say, is because we're concerned that if we start taking the money and they're going to go paying everybody back, they're going to be discouraged. No one's going to want to do it. There's an opportunity for this person to do tshuva if we make it a little bit easier for them to do so. Now, that's a very dangerous statement to make. It means people can go around stealing from everybody and they have no accountability. It's not what it means. The Rishonim qualified the statement, but the point is correct. The point that they make is very correct, and that is that we assume that if a person is going to find such an insurmountable challenge when they come to the opportunity of tshuva, we have to do something to try to negate that feeling. We have to do something to try to help them feel encouraged. Furthermore, we have a pasuk in Sefer Vayikra, where the Torah says, Lo sonu ish es abiso. It's better known to all of us as the Isra of Onas Devarim. What does Onas Devarim mean? It means we're not allowed to harass people. We're not allowed to torment them with our words. Onas Devarim means you cause somebody pain through your words. The Mishnah Maseches Bava Metzia, as well as the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, right? What is the primary example of Onas Devarim? Well, there are a million examples we can give of how you can torment somebody, how you can harass them. But the example that the Mishnah gives, and it's quoted in the Halacha and the Rambam, is if you have a person who does tshuva, and you go back to that person and you say, Zechar ma'asecha harishonim. I was in university with you when you were 18, 19 years old. I remember what your life was like before you are now the leader of our community. I remember what you were up to. I remember the girls you dated. I remember the people you were hanging out with. I remember the drugs you took. All these stories that people are ashamed and embarrassed to be reminded of. While it's true that that's a part of their history, but now they're in a very different place. And the Gemara says, if you choose to remind them or to publicly state some of the previous history that they may have had at a previous stage of their lives, that would be the Issur d'Oraisa of Onas Devarim. Once again, because to say something about an unfavorable part of my history, of my past, is so humiliating, it's so shameful, and it's something I'm not proud of, and it's something I don't want people to know about, that would be an Issur d'Oraisa of Onas Devarim. So there's a gripping, riveting discussion that unfolded about 1,000 years ago. I'm sure many of us have heard of Rabbeinu Gershom Ma'or HaGola. Rabbeinu Gershom lived in the middle of the 10th century, and he was known, Rashi writes in one place, that Rabbeinu Gershom, for all intents and purposes, was the Rebbe of all the Rishonim. So you can't say that for fact, that he actually taught all the Rishonim. He didn't. He was hundreds of years before many of the Rishonim lived. But what Rashi means is his influence was so profound, was so impactful, that the Rishonim really went in the derech of Rabbeinu Gershom Ma'or HaGola. So what's the story with Rabbeinu Gershom? The story was that there was a Meshumad. There was a Kohen who was a regular member of the community, and at some point in his life he became a Meshumad. And as a result of his Shmad, he no longer believed, obviously. He was an apostate. And after that happened, a major discussion broke out in the town. If at some point he comes back to his old ways and he rejoins our community and he renounces the Avodah Zarah or whatever religion he was a part of, would we now allow him once again to have the privileges of Kohanim or not? Would we assume that now, look, he did something so outrageous, he did something so egregious, you can't just come back. We don't let you get up and duchen like we would allow the other Kohanim to do. You don't get privileges. You're lucky that we even let you back into the community. We're not going to give you the first aliyah. We're not going to give you privileges. You've given up your rights to be a Kohen. That was the question that was sent to Rabbeinu Gershom Ma'or HaGola. Rabbeinu Gershom goes through a very detailed, exhaustive exchange to explain in his position what he thinks should be done. So let's look together a little bit at what he says. Number one, Rabbeinu Gershom writes a line that I think is extremely powerful, where he says, you know, today there are two different schools of thought. I assume it was always this way. But now we hear, because of the internet, we hear about what everybody says about everything. In halacha, you can either say everything's mutter till proven asr, or there are other people who feel everything's asr until proven mutter. Right? You can have two different perspectives. Rabbeinu Gershom actually writes an extremely instructive comment here, where he writes the following. Let's look at it together, number Dalit. Hilkach. Again, I just took out excerpts from a longer tshuva where he says, Hilkach. Ein la neraya lo min ha-mikra v'lo min ha-mishnah l'poslo. He says, I look through all of Mishnah, I look through all of Tanakh, and I look through all of Chazal, and I do not find a source that would tell us any indication that a Kohen who's done something even as outrageous as Shmad, but he comes back, I have no reason to assume that he should not be accepted back as a Kohen. And now he writes, Yesh lanu siyua min ha-mikra mi-mishnah shalola poslo. I have a proof in the opposite direction that we should not cancel him, that we should absolutely accept him and put him back in his position where he once was. Number one, the first and initial response that he has, the reasoning that he gives, first of all, is we know the Gemara says, Onas Devarim is a serious crime. You're not allowed to torment people. And he says, imagine You're not allowed to say to a Baal Tshuva, Zechar ma'asecha harishonim, I remember what you were like back in the days before you were at this stage of your life. You're not allowed to say such a thing. Writes the Rabbeinu Gershom. Imagine, in Tomar, if we would say to this individual, Lo yale leduchan velo yikra b'torah tchila, if we would now say, you know, we appreciate that you came back to the community, we're so happy to have you, but unfortunately, you've given up your rights and privileges as a Kohen. What is the implication of that? So he comes to Shul, he has 10 brothers, they're all standing up there to duchen on Yantif, and he's the only one sitting in his seat. Everybody turns to him and says, are you feeling okay? He says, yeah, I'm fine. The problem is, do you remember? A couple of years ago, I went off, then I came back on. I had this complicated relationship with Judaism. The family wasn't talking to me. It's going to get everyone talking again. Says Rabbeinu Gershom, can there be an anas devarim gedola mizu? Says Rabbeinu Gershom, in his words, ein lecha anas gedola mizu. There is no harassment, there is no humiliation greater than that itself. Then leaving him out from the rest of his family and saying, you're not entitled to have the privileges of kahuna, that would be anas devarim to the nth degree. So that's reason number one, he says. There is no justification to tell him that he is not allowed back. But more fundamentally, he says we need to always make an attempt as best as we can to encourage and support somebody who wants to genuinely become a Baal Tshuva. Says Rabbeinu Gershom, what's going to happen to this person if they know that even after being involved in a sincere effort or attempt to be Chozer B'Tshuva, we will never accept them? Regardless of how hard they try, regardless of whatever they do, whatever attempt they make, we will never fully accept them back to where they were. What's their perspective going to be? Just forget it. Why get involved? I'm never going to have the outcome that I want. So why do this at all? Just forget the whole thing. I'll stay where I am. Says Rabbeinu Gershom, that if we are not going to try our best to make sure never to alienate, never to estrange a member of the community who wants to be a Baal Tshuva and reinstate them to where they rightfully belong, we're never going to have Baal Tshuva. So what we see from all this is, there was an attempt, a valiant attempt, by the leaders of every generation through the Mishnayos, in the Gemara, in the days of the Rishonim, to do whatever possible to allow a person to feel encouraged, just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu does for all of us. Atanu sein yad l'poshim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu outstretches his hand to try to allow all of us to come back and to be saved and to allow us to feel welcome once again in the embrace of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it is for this reason that Rabbeinu Gershom went so far as to say that he made a cheirem. We're familiar with some of the other takanas that Rabbeinu Gershom made. For example, Rabbeinu Gershom said, Lo yigarish adam es ishto bal karcho. A husband is no longer allowed to just wake up one day, turn to his wife and say, you know what, I'm divorcing you against her wishes. You're not allowed to do that. He made a number of takanos that actually stuck. He said, polygamy is no longer allowed in the Jewish community, even though if you look in the Pesukim and Chumash, it is allowed. But he said it's inappropriate for a Jewish community to run in such a way. It's not something that fits the morals and values that we stand for. And therefore, he said, cheirem on a person who does it. One of the charamim that he added was cheirem on a person, which, by the way, Rabbeinu Tam writes in the Sefer HaYashar. What does cheirem actually mean? You know, we throw around the term, oh, this person, cheirem, what is it? It's not a joke. Cheirem, Rabbeinu Tam explains, is the same letters as? Not so complicated. What? Rachem. Nice, you're a positive thinker. try to think a little bit negative. Maybe in New York we think a little differently, I'm not sure. I'm jealous. But you think a little differently, it's Ramach. Right? Ramach Evar. So what's the significance? Cheirem Ramach, says Rabbeinu Tam. When we put a cheirem on a person, what we're saying is, we're giving them a curse that your Ramach Evarim should drop dead. That's what a cheirem is. This is not a joke to be throwing this around. A cheirem is considered to be a very serious position for a person to be in the community, or not be in. You're excommunicated, and we give you a curse that the Ramach Evarim should be cursed. It's a terrible thing. So in that list of charamim, Rabbeinu Gershom said, cheirem on a person, shelo levayish balei tshuva me'avonam bifneihem. Although the Torah says onas devarim is a terrible crime, he put a cheirem on a person who dares to violate onas devarim on a Baal Tshuva. Don't ever talk to a person about something that's going to give them shame or embarrassment from a prior mistake or from a prior deed that they may have been involved with that they don't want spoken about. It's not just a violation of onas devarim. He put a cheirem on such a person because it's important for us to go to the extreme when we have opportunities to give people chizuk when it comes to this great gift of being shav b'tshuva. So certainly, shame and embarrassment is something that is so distressing. It's something that we talk about in our davening, shalod nevosh v'lo nikalim. We talk about the fact that we never want to be embarrassed. We never want to feel shame. Embarrassment is something that is a terrible feeling for anyone to have, any human being. So actually, my father once told me that every month we have the Birchas HaChodesh, which is really referred to as Tfilas Rav. Rav in the Gemara Brachos actually is the one who authored the sketch of this tefillah. It's not exactly the way it's found in the Gemara, but the basic outline of the tefillah is found in the Gemara Maseches Brachos, and Rav is the one who wrote it. So it's referred to as Tfilas Rav, the special paragraph that we add. So we ask for Yerushamayim, Yerushchet, we ask for all the different things every month as we usher in the new Chodesh, the new month. But there, my father told me he was growing up in the Bronx, and I don't know how many people here went to Yeshiva University, but for those who remember, Rabbi Chalap. So Rabbi Chalap was once, Nara Yisi, he was once a young man, and he had a father who was Rabbi Chalap Sr., who was a rabbi in the Bronx, and he was a couple years older than my father. Rabbi Chalap from YU was a couple years older than my father, and my father actually davened in Rabbi Chalap Sr. shul, so that's why they were very friendly as children. He said Rabbi Chalap actually helped teach him a lot when he was a young child. So my father told me that at the time, there was once a fight in the shul that broke out. Yes, such things happen in New York. So there was a fight in the shul because a chazan got up to daven. He was a beautiful chazan, beautiful bal tefillah, and it was Shabbos Mevarchim, and he got up and he said, Chaim sheyesh bahem busha uchlima. People started shouting out from the crowd, no, you got the word wrong. It's Chaim sheein bahem busha uchlima. We asked that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give us a life where we're not going to be embarrassed. And he insisted, no, you all have the nusach wrong. They show him in the siddur, and he says, no, I can tell, I can assure you, the siddur that I use every other time I daven always says Chaim Sheyesh Ben Busha Ochlima. And my father said at the time, it turned out, Rabbi Chalap told him that there are actually two minhagim. Some minhagim have the practice to say Chaim Sheyein Bahem, as most of us generally say. And some minhagim from Europe actually had the nusach of Chaim Sheyesh Bahem Busha Ochlima. Because a healthy dose of shame and embarrassment is something that's not so terrible. We should feel a little bit of shame. It's what makes us feel the need to try to perfect ourselves. I was actually thinking about it the other day. This year I just started to teach in Stern College, so now I'm in Manhattan every so often during the week. And you walk down, blocks and blocks of individuals, and it's bustling in the streets, and sometimes you pass by these people, and you ask yourself, do they have no dignity? How are you not ashamed to be doing this in the middle of Times Square? How are you not embarrassed to walk around the streets like this? You're rolling on the floor. Now, maybe they're on drugs, they don't realize what they're doing. But sometimes you have a person and you ask yourself, how can they do such a thing? How are you not embarrassed to be walking around? There's thousands of people watching you. You have no shame? And the answer is yes. They've hit rock bottom. Can't get worse than this. And in fact, they're living life with no shame. And as a result of that, it's very difficult to pull a person out of that kind of life because they have nothing more they can possibly lose. They're already in such a shameful position. They think nothing worse can ever happen to them, so forget it. It only goes uphill from there, I guess. Shame sometimes is very important. When a person still has their dignity and wants to try to uphold their reputation or what their dignity stands for or what their personality is, that's very healthy for all of us. And that's why some had the minhag to say, not Chaim She'ein Bahem Busha Ochlima, but rather Chaim She'yesh Bahem Busha Ochlima. We ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu not that we should be embarrassed in our lives. We shouldn't have embarrassing moments, but we should have a sense, personally, of some shame. We should understand that when we do things that are unbecoming of who our personality is, we should feel shame for that, and therefore want to improve and perfect ourselves. I actually read a fascinating article about a year ago, and the title of the article was, I'm just going to give you a few snippets, Why We Have Nothing to Hide. Why Dutch People Do Not Mind You Peering Into Their Homes. Okay? So anybody here ever been to the Netherlands? Okay, next time you go, maybe you'll notice this, maybe it will change by then, I'm not sure, but I found this absolutely fascinating. For many visitors to the Netherlands, one of the great discoveries when wandering through the streets of Amsterdam or other towns and cities is that you can often take a look inside people's homes when it gets dark. That's because many Dutch people never close the curtains or blinds. Often, people don't even have curtains or blinds on their windows. At a time when coronavirus restrictions are confined to people all over the world, so they wrote that COVID is making people stuck in their homes. Here in the Netherlands, everybody feels they're in each other's homes because everybody can just see into each other's windows, and it's full transparency, and everybody feels very connected. Very nice. So they wrote, so why do they have this minhag there that nobody has shades? Well, they said, I have nothing to hide. I have nothing to hide. I'm not ashamed of anything. You want to look into my windows and see what's going on? No problem. Look into my house. I have nothing to hide. Protestant religion, which insists that honest citizens have nothing to hide. And this is a shita that they have. I have nothing to hide, and therefore, I'm not going to close up my blinds. I want you to look straight into my bedroom, straight into every room in my house, because there's nothing in my life that I should feel ashamed of. That's a very dangerous place to be. Why is it a dangerous place to be in? Because if you have no shame, and there's nothing that holds you back from feeling a sense of busha every once in a while, who knows where that can lead? Which is why the Gemara tells us, and I feel especially now when we live in a generation which is so into oversharing everything, where there's just a general attitude of such an openness to the whole world, letting everybody in on what I'm eating for dinner tonight, as if it's everyone's business, or what it is that I'm doing together with my wife at a private moment, when we're celebrating an anniversary, when we're celebrating a birthday, when we're celebrating a personal milestone, just this attitude of oversharing, of such an openness, is very, very dangerous. And that's why the Gemara says that one of the most essential, fundamental attributes of the Jewish people are Rachbanim, Baishanim, Vegomle Chasadim. It's innate to every Jew to feel a sense of rachmanis. We should feel a sense of caring for other people who need our caring, who need our sensitive touch. We should feel that it's our duty to be gomle chasad. But in the midst of that discussion, the Gemara also says that baishanim is one of the core characteristics of who the Jewish people are, which is why the Gemara says, kala misbarish, lo b'mehera uchote, someone who feels a sense of busha and understands that my reputation is on the line with this, I'm not going to fall prey to whatever it is that's presenting itself to me. Because I understand it's going to be embarrassing, it's going to be shameful and humiliating. So, I want to take us on a little bit of a journey. How much time do we have? We're getting there? Okay. Look, I was told that last year, Rabbi Moshe Weinberger was here. Rabbi Weinberger is our next door neighbor in Woodmere. If I'm following his timeline, I have till next week. So everyone get comfortable. All right, we'll wrap it up. That was meant in the highest form of praise. Somehow, he gets up, and when he speaks, nobody even notices what time it is. It's L'mayla min hazman. It's not the case when the rest of us speak. So let's just learn a little bit of Navi together. The story of Ahaz ben Yosam, who was one of the Jewish kings, I guess the nefarious Jewish kings, one of the terrible kings, disgraceful, infamous Jewish kings. So what do we know about him? The Psukim and Malachim basically tell us, we're not going to read it all inside, but basically he lived at the time of the Navi Yeshaya. There was a lot of unrest, a lot of impending wars going on all around Yerushalayim. And Ahaz was very concerned. As the Melech Yehuda, as the king of the Jewish people, it was his responsibility to make sure they were safe. The bright side was, he had a Navi who actually lived in Yerushalayim at the time. And the Navi says to him, listen, I know you're afraid, I understand there's an impending, looming danger right out there, but let me tell you, I see the Nebuah that nothing is going to happen. You just need to lay low, let things be, ride the wave, nothing will happen. Now as the king, he refused to accept the words and the advice of the Navi. He said, I'm going to do it my way. And in defiance, he decides to go out, make a peace treaty with Aram. He tries to make a deal with Aram, is that who it was? With Ashur, sorry. He tries to make a deal with them, and he's not listening to Yeshaba. He won't have it. He went so far as to make a deal with them. He cuts off the Dalsos HaHechal. He clears out the coffers of the Beis HaMikdash and sends it all to Melech Ashur as an attempt to try to make some kind of arrangement with them that they shouldn't have a war, that he should try to help defend him. All of that is going on. In the background, this is not the only thing he's done wrong. Okay, so he didn't listen to a Navi. Terrible thing. There were many Jews throughout history who didn't listen to the Nevi'im. That is not the worst of the evils of Ahaz. It came to a point where he felt that he had to do even more. And he shuts down all opportunity for anyone to visit the Beis HaMikdash. He actually gets rid of all the Kalim in the Beis HaMikdash. He clears it out, locks the doors, makes alternative bamos all over Yerushalayim that people should sacrifice to Avodah Zarah, he really brings the Jewish community down to a downward spiral. Things are just completely out of control, to the point that personally, he even offers his children to the Molech. He sacrifices his own children to Avodah Zarah. He murders his own kids. So this is the kind of personality that we're dealing with. And if we went through the psukim, you can read them inside on your own. It's quite clear that the Gemara, that the psukim really outline how nefarious a person this actually was. Okay. So much so, his son was actually Chizkiyo HaMelech, who was a good king, who actually totally reversed the tide. When Chizkiyo HaMelech saw that his father passed away, the Gemara says, Girer Mita Shal Atzmo Zaviv. He actually dragged the coffin of his father, the body of his father, through the streets to show what a bizayon his father lived through his life. That's what he did, to show what kind of person his father was. Okay, that being the case, we know that this was a king that was evil, destructive, malicious. Let's look at a Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin, which should be a little bit surprising. So we have a Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin, if you turn to the next side of the page, where the Gemara tells us as follows. We're familiar with the first line of the Gemara Maseches Sanhedrin, ninth parak, Kol Yisrael Yesh Lahem Chelek L'Olam Haba. Every Jew has a portion in the world to come. It's so beautiful, it sounds great. What we often don't speak about is the dot, dot, dot of that Mishnah, which is, every Jew has a portion in the world to come, except for the following. Right, so most of us never heard the rest of that Mishnah, because we don't like to talk about it. But the Mishnah is there, and the Rambam outlines what he believes the halacha are those categories of people who do not have an opportunity to be part of the world to come. The Rambam says, Balei Lashon Hara. Somebody, doesn't mean someone who speaks Lashon Hara, means somebody who is steeped in Lashon Hara. A Baal Lashon Hara means somebody who is really engaged in this as a full-time job. Machtiei Harabim. Somebody who causes the community to do something terrible as a community. How are you ever going to make good for what you did wrong? Okay, all those people. The Mishnah there lists a number of kings who did not have a portion in the world to come. So the Gemara then asks, let's look together. Mipnei ma'alo manu achas. We just learned how evil, how malicious Achaz was throughout the course of his life. He served Avodah Zarah. As if that wasn't bad enough that he served Avodah Zarah, he got the whole Jewish community to serve Avodah Zarah. He killed his own children. He shut the Beis HaMikdash. He didn't listen to the Navi. How much more do we need to say about him? So how did he escape this list? The Mishnah says, every Jew has a portion of the world to come except for the following few people. Why is Achaz not on that list? How do you understand that? Writes the Gemara of Yosef Amar, very simple. You're right. He really forfeited his portion in the world to come. However, says Rabbi Yosef, Mipneisha Hayulo Boshes Panami Yeshayahu. When Yeshaya Hanavi came to give Musar to Achaz, when he approaches him and he calls him out on all the terrible things he's doing, the Gemara describes here that he buries his face in shame. He takes a me'il, he takes a garment, and he covers his face because he's so embarrassed that Yeshaya HaNavi came to talk to him about all the evil things that he's done. Because of that one sensational moment when Yeshaya HaNavi looks him in the eye, calls him out for everything he's done wrong, covers his face, says the Gemara, he feels a little bit of sense of busha. He has a portion in the world to come. And from here, we see that it requires an extremely delicate balance. On the one hand, for a person to feel a sense of busha, a sense of understanding that I can be better, that I know I am better. And this is embarrassing, not because others are going to look at me, but it's embarrassing to who I believe I should be for me to behave this way. That's a very powerful feeling. So much so that it saved the world to come for Melech Achaz, who was the worst of the worst. And yet even he gets a chelek l'olam haba because of that moment of busha that he felt when Yeshaya HaNavi confronts him and asks him about all the terrible things that have happened. while at the same time, busha can be completely paralyzing. And that is why throughout the generations we find in the Mishnah, once again in the Gemara, in the days of the Rishonim, that there were great lengths that were taken to try to find this balance. On the one hand, to be encouraging to people, to remove any possibility for them to be ashamed or humiliated or embarrassed by us as a community for when they're trying sincerely to do the process of tshuva as it's supposed to be done, while at the same time, internally for a person to understand, as I do tshuva, this is so much a part of who I need to be, of what I need to feel. As I said before, if you have a person who's fallen to rock bottom, who no longer has anything to be embarrassed of, it becomes very difficult for them to turn around. There is nothing left for them to think about being embarrassed of or ashamed from. And that's so much an integral part of what the tshuva process is about. Let me just close with a comment of Reb Shamshon Raphael Hirsch, in the Sefer on Chumash, where the Torah tells us that Adam and Chava were living together in Gan Eden, and what are the words there? V'lo yisboshashu. So is that positive or negative? It says they were living together before the chet of Adam HaRishon. They were not embarrassed. They were not ashamed. They had no clothing. They were walking around Gan Eden, just as is. And suddenly, after the chet, everything changed. So is that good or bad? That means we're all supposed to live without shame or with shame. Says Rav Hirsch so beautifully in his commentary on Chumash, Hashem Yizbarach nata bechazdo regesh zeba adam. Rav Hirsch's commentary was obviously not written in Hebrew, but it's been translated. So he writes as follows: Hashem Yizbarach nata bechazdo regesh zeba adam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in his kindness, implanted in all of us, instilled in all of us, regesh zeb, this hergesh, this feeling of shame. Leman yeda, in order that a person should know him, eino omed al hagova. A person should have the innate ability to understand from themselves, from the inside, that I'm not living up to who I'm supposed to be. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted all of us to be created this way. He wanted all of us to feel sometimes a shameful feeling, not that other people should shame us, but that I should be ashamed of my own behavior. How can I act like this? It's a very healthy thing, says Rav Hirsch. It's exactly how HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted it to be. Simen tov la'adam imhu baishan. It's a great sign if a person still feels a sense of busha. Ki alov l'shpot es atzmo, because that gives him or her the possibility to be critical of himself, to be mindful of the choices that he is making in his own life, to understand that if I have busha, it's a regesh, it's a feeling that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted me to have, because it helps to keep me in check. And that's what we think about at this time of the year. Kedalim uchirashim dafaknu delasecha. We turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You ever have a mishulach comes to the door? So there are different kinds of mishulachim who come. Sometimes there's a hired mishulach who's not really collecting for himself. He's hired by somebody else to collect for a worthy cause. But he doesn't show up at the door with shame. He doesn't feel uncomfortable, because it's not his problem. He's getting paid to do this job. Sometimes you can sense when a person comes to your door, Kedalim uchirashim dafaknu delasecha. The person is so genuine and so sincere. It's their life. It's their child that they need help with. It's their spouse that if they don't collect this money, will not have the procedure, will not make it through. And our heart goes out much more to such a person. Not because the situation is worse than the other one. Both of them are identical. Both of them are the same, or perhaps even worse. But we understand that when a person comes with a certain sense of genuineness, kedalim uchirashim, I feel a sense of humility. I feel a sense of busha. I feel a sense like, this is not what I should be doing, and I'm so uncomfortable to do it, but I'm doing it because I have to. That is the approach we have when we come to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Unfortunately, we find ourselves in a place where we need to ask the Rachmanis of the Ribbono Shel Olam, where we need to come to Him, Kedalim Uchirashim. It's embarrassing. Yes, it is embarrassing. But to remind ourselves that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always Nosei Niyad LaPoshim. Not only does He give us the gift of tshuva, but He extends a hand, He encourages, He goes out of His way to try in every possible manner to make all of us feel that we are welcome, that we once again have the ability to join the embrace of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what Yom Kippur is all about. Lifnei Hashem Titar, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us the opportunity to come back. He tries to make us feel that we have a place in the makom of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we all have something significant that we can contribute, and how special it is that all of us have the opportunity to engage with the Ribono Shel Olam in this very auspicious time of year during the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, culminating in Yom HaKippurim, to engage once again, to come before Him, Kedalim Mechur Hashem, and ultimately to accept that hand and to give it back to Him. Like we say in Shir HaShirim, Yishakenim in Hashikos Pio, we have an opportunity to once again embrace the Ribono Shel Olam. It's not only His embrace, but it's our return of an embrace to Him once again. So I wish everyone a Gemar Chasima Tova, Yimalei Hashem Kol Mishalos Libeinu L'Tova, and we should have the opportunity to be shav b'tshuva shleima lefanecha. Have a wonderful evening, everybody.
Thank you, Rabbi Schechter. We're going to daven Marav presently, and if there is interest, we can say slichos.